You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Lee McCormick. Lee is the founder of the Ranch Recovery Center in Nunnally, Tennessee, and the Canyon Treatment Center in Malibu, California. He is also co-founder of Nashville's Integrative Life Center and Community Recovery Program in Nashville, Tennessee. Through the organization of Spirit Recovery, Incorporated, Lee facilitates the production of healing and recovery conferences and spiritual journeys around the world. He is the executive producer of the documentary Dreaming Heaven, in which he plays a leading role. He is the author of Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag, the Spirit Recovery Meditation Journal, Meditations for Reclaiming Your Authenticity, and co-author of Dreaming Heaven, The Beginning is Near. You can find out more about Lee and his work and books on his website at www.spiritrecovery.com. So let's welcome him to the show now. Hi, Lee. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. I'm good. It's a nice rainy night in Tennessee.
For some reason, I don't picture rain in Tennessee. I don't know why.
Well, the world here is so green, it's amazing.
Oh, that you sounds know. Wonderful. That sounds wonderful. Well, I'm in the process of reading your book, Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag, and I'm over halfway through, and I'm absolutely loving your journey and the adventure that occurs around the middle of the book when you start your travels to Mexico. Maybe we could start out by you sharing what your motivation was for your walk on the spiritual path.
Sure. you're reading the book, so you know that I checked myself into an addictions treatment program like 17 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I was 41 years old, so I wasn't a kid, you know. And my experience early on in the recovery, in that recovery, I guess, realm or that recovery space, I really had as many questions as more questions than there were answers as such, you know. The traditional recovery format was pretty much a guidebook of here, you need to do this now. And if you'll do all these things and do them well, then you'll be fine. But
right.
my calling or my feeling was that it wasn't about just fitting back in and being a good, compliant, recovering person. There was something missing. And there really had been something missing all my life. And I think I woke up to the fact that there was just some inherent disconnection between the stories and the version of reality and the culture and the family and the legacy and all that stuff that we all inherit in the world, that there was just a big piece missing in the whole thing. So my recovery journey became a seeking journey of, you know what, whatever it is that's missing, I got to find it. And that, you know, at that time we had a lot of bookstores. That was back in the mid 90s, you know, and there used to be bookstores everywhere.
Yeah, right.
So I would go in bookstores and just walk up and down the aisles and look for something that looked interesting. And I read a lot. One day I saw the book The Four Agreements by Miguel Ruiz. And I picked it up, took it home, and it just resonated with me.
Oh yeah, you know, yeah. It's an outstanding book.
Yes, it is. And you know what? It resonated so deeply that I looked into it further and found out that there were teachers that Miguel had trained that led journeys to Teotihuacan, which is the place of the pyramids, the city of the gods, they call it, outside of Mexico City. Mm-hmm. And I signed up and went on a journey, which you've read that too in the book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but my journey in early recovery was really, it was multidimensional, because our experiences in life truly are multidimensional. On one hand, I needed to stop doing the things that fed my addiction. You know, I needed to stop the bleeding. I needed to stop doing the stuff that was sabotaging my life. And I knew that. And that was in one regard very pragmatic and very deliberate, you know, and I needed structure and I needed a program as such to support me in that. And at the same time, I wanted to find whatever that was, that calling, that you know, empty space a lot of people refer to it as. You know, and that's what called me out, basically. And I made a deal. You could say I made a deal with God. I made a deal with what's out there that I pray to and talk to. You know, I just said, if you'll bring it, I'll do it. You bring the opportunities, and I'll say yes. So I did.
Wow. That's wonderful. Part of your journey, apparently, in your early recovery, involves the use of horses as healers. And I've had people share that horses can actually read your mind. I don't know how that translates, how our confused mental states would appear to a horse, but they do seem to be extremely intuitive and healing. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, about your work with horses and healing?
Sure. Well, that was a really cool, you know, not coincidence that I grew up around family ranches. My dad had a ranch in southern Wyoming when I was a kid. My family homesteaded actually in Florida, the other end of the country, homesteaded in Florida in the mid-1800s. So I'd grown up around a big family farm ranch in North Florida. And had horses there, and then I spent my summers on my dad's ranch in southern Wyoming, and of course I had a pony or a horse there, and I've been around horses all my life. I started cowboying when I was 15, 16 years old, so I had a lifelong relationship with horses, and have always respected them, always. I just love working with them. I'd about rather work with a horse than I would a person.
right.
Yeah. So when I checked myself into the treatment center in Arizona, they had an equine therapy program, and so one week we went out and did exercises and did things with the horses, and I'd never been, you know, I had no idea. I knew nothing about recovery or therapy or, you know, any of the aspects of that deep human healing, that kind of work, that kind of dynamic. I had no idea that any of that existed. I'd never had any friends that were in a 12-step program. I was just clueless. And then I'd check myself into this treatment program in Tucson. And so it was, that in itself was just a huge life-changing experience, realizing the whole backstory to humanity, all the trauma and the fear and the abuse and the brokenheartedness and the stuff that goes on behind closed doors all over this country and all over the world that nobody talks about.
Oh, yeah.
You know? But then showing up out there with the horses, it was a thread, you know, through my whole life. So it was very powerful for me. And it brought another dimension also, because I'd always known that horses were intuitive. I mean, I'd, heck, we'd lived together my whole life. I'd done stuff with him my whole life. But I'd never seen that level of connection, that the way they... I knew that they could read a person's energy. I think they see us as the energy bodies that we are, as much as they see us in a human form. And mm-hmm. I knew that horses can... They can see whether you're congruent and whether you're honest. You know, they can see what's going on with you. You can be angry as long as you're honest about it. But if you've got a lot of anger stuffed down in you, you know, you've got this kind of seething, angry energy, but you're trying to act like everything's cool, they don't trust incongruence. They trust congruence in a human. And they're flight animals. You know, so a horse, if a horse is not comfortable, and a horse always looks to the person to, they look to you to be able to count on you and to be able to trust you. And if the horse doesn't trust you, then they pretty much don't want anything to do with you. I mean, you can ride them, but you never hook up with them, what we call hook up with them. You don't, you just don't, that connection doesn't happen. And in the therapy practices, the connections and what's revealed and what happens is just magical.
Well, absolutely, yeah. I know a lot of people are doing work with that now and getting having great success with it. Do you, since we're still talking about the 12-step recovery program, and I've had done my time in 12-step rooms and recovery houses myself, one thing that I've observed is that there's often a kind of, I guess you could call it a stall, you know, like a car's traveling along and it's kind of starts sputtering. And it seems that because the program is so closed and they don't encourage the use of other literature, that you kind of have to do that yourself, and apparently you have to be that kind of person who does that, and you are one of those people, clearly. What are some of the solutions to that process for people who don't want to, who want to grow or accelerate a little faster and step outside the box of existing realities?
Well, that can, of course. I mean, you just said you've had your experiences in the rooms and around the 12-step world. That can be tricky. It just depends on I guess on the home group you're associated with or the meetings that you go to, because a lot of, for all the great offerings of working the steps and for all the great offerings of the fellowship and everything else, it can become a very fear-oriented, narrow-minded, small feeling dynamic. I'm not judging it. I'm just saying that we all suffer, and our cultures suffer, and all of humanity is suffering from living and breathing and eating in a very fear-based, from a very fear-based point of view. You know, fear is rampant all through everything about us and around us. And it's not the truth of what we are, but it certainly comes to manipulate and dominate, you know, our our human reality.
And
the rooms
process,
are full of a lot of fear because there's so much suffering. Of course you're scared. You know, of course you're nervous. And we don't... One of the greatest losses, from my experience, in our lives is that we abandon faith in ourself for the sake of trying to fit into the world. That happens when we're little kids. Largely, you know, as little kids, we're told that we need to behave this way in order to be good enough, and if we want to be loved, we have to be good enough, and we need to earn these kind of grades, and we need to learn this language, and we need to live these practices, and we need to follow this religion, and we need to understand what our parents expect of us and live up to their expectations and what our priests or our rabbis or our teachers expect from us. And so the world is this incredibly conditional reality. And, you know, as little humans, we don't have any concept whatsoever, I don't believe, of what conditionality is. We don't have any idea what judgment is, as, you know, as 3-, 4-, 5-year-old kids.
You know, if I was just talking about the nature of how we abandon faith in ourselves for the sake of fitting into the world, basically, mm-hmm. make a long story short. And, you know, from that point on, is we live our lives chasing good enough, trying to be good enough, mm-hmm. and trying to earn respect and trying to win, you know, and be cool. And just we start living that outside-in way of life. Mm-hmm. And that is largely a fear-driven reality. You know, because the unspoken side of that is that if I'm not winning, if I'm not accomplishing what I should be accomplishing, or if I'm not living up to expectations, then I'm not good enough. And if I'm not good enough, I fail. And if I fail, you know, God knows what happens. So there's a lot of that expectation and a lot of that fear that's inherent in the recovery scene because we're also beat up.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And in the tradition, as strong as the traditions are, the reality is only about 25% of the people that come into the room stick around, you know, and only 20% or less, they say, you know, quote unquote, make it or stay sober. And that's a miserable percentage. So there's clearly, as great as the 12-step programs are, there is something big time missing in the paradigm of what we come to call recovery. You know, there's something major missing there. And the rooms were great to me as a tool and as a grounding place and a connecting place, but it was never my reality. I wasn't interested in building my life around mindedly, and I'm an addict. I knew I was addicted, but I was more than an addict. So, you know, I kept searching, and I'm willful enough and intentional enough that, you know, I could go to meetings and say what I needed to say, and then I finally just learned, you know, what I need to just go to meetings, learn what I can learn, get what I need from it, and don't worry about sharing all my truth because there's no point in provoking a bunch of reactions. So
right.
I took what I needed and left the rest.
You're right, yeah. That's a good philosophy. Well,
yeah,
so,
well, it worked.
You also eventually started your own centers, and I wasn't anticipating on asking you this question, but this kind of gets us to segue into your journey to Mexico and the spiritual discoveries that you made there at the various temples. And maybe we could talk about how your path expanded exponentially and what different traditions you pulled from, and then how you shaped your own recovery centers, because you do run or are responsible for a couple of different recovery centers. One's in Malibu, one of my old stomping grounds. So,
well, I'm no longer involved in the canyon. I founded it and lived with it for a couple years, and then I sold my part and moved on. But, you know, the imprint of what we created, some aspects of that are still there. But, I can, you know, the basis of my relationship, again, with recovery is it's not about us finding a way to fit back into the world. What we're lacking and missing is feeling comfortable in our own skin. Mm-hmm. You know, we've lost our relationship with our truth, with our authenticity. We need to be recovering faith in ourself and recovering faith in our, you could say we need to be recovering faith and awareness in relationship to our own spirit, our own heart. That's why the book's called Spirit Recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a rebooting, I believe. It's a rebooting of what we were created to be and what we still are. It's like our authenticity doesn't go anywhere. We just stop living in relationship to it. We don't live a relationship to our truth front and center. We live a relationship to the world first, and then we find a way to try and
express our truth within the constructs and the confines of what we need to do to fit into the world. And it's just
backwards. Right.
You know, recovery is a return to living from my truth and expressing my truth with respect for the world, but I do not give my power away to the world anymore. I don't live by opinion and judgments and fear.
Right. Well said.
Yes. You know, and gosh, I don't know. Life is just interesting and amazing. And I'll tell you what I've found. There's just, again, there's so many levels and so many dimensions to all of this that, you know, I was a very impatient person. Maybe that's why I was a coke addict. You know, I like to go fast. I want everything to happen right now.
Right.
You know? And the interesting thing about healing and true transformation and true awakening in your life is that you will learn patience during that process. Because we can only unravel so fast. And we can only wake up so fast. It's almost like if we unravel slowly, so we can learn as we unravel how we manage to weave together the mess that we wake up in the middle of. You know, and if I can learn how I created it and how it came to be on the way out, then I learn the nuance of, okay, well, I don't want to do that anymore. You know, and it's certainly about a lot more than just not using and going to meetings. You know, it's about learning how I function as a human. You know, as a kid growing up, I was not taught anything about the nuance of being a human being. I was taught how to be a good boy. I was taught, you know, how to be a good this or a good that. But that was all. I was taught a program and how to live according to the program of my people. I was not taught the nuance and the mystery of me as a human being with an emotional body and an intellectual body and a spirit and a physical body. And I wasn't taught anything about the mysticism of being a human being. And all that stuff is what was really missing.
Right. And it's as if we, you know, we're brought up with, you know, cases full of belief systems, and then most people don't even realize this until they're in their retirement age, and even then they don't get it, and so people are passing on belief systems that are limiting and self-defeating. So then to the awakening process and changing your consciousness seems to depend on examining those belief systems and releasing them as quickly as possible, or at least holding them more loosely.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, because our beliefs are just beliefs. They're not the truth.
Right.
That's why there's two different words there. It's interesting, and because we inherit a legacy when we're born. We inherit the legacy of our family, of our culture, of our people. You know, we inherit the legacy of the time. We inherit the legacy is, like Shakespeare said, it's all the world's a stage, and, you know, we're all players. We inherit the framework of an entire reality that humanity calls reality, that the world we were born into refers to as quote unquote reality. But the truth is, it's all a story.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a framework and a story. And if we don't show up for it, it crumbles and it goes away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if nobody went to work for 6 months in this country, the whole structure of what we call reality would collapse. Well, it's not actually a reality. It's a human imagined dream state almost. And yet, by the fact we've given our faith to it, we live as though it was absolute reality, and we live as though we are responsible to live up to the expectations of this grand story, rather than realizing that we're the ones creating the story. The story's not responsible for us. We're responsible for the maintenance or the creation or the quality or integrity of the story. So we're all living backwards these days.
Right.
You know, we're running around killing each other, judging each other, doing all this stuff that we have been doing generation after generation, and we're doing it because we believe we're being loyal to our country, or we're being loyal to our religion, or we're being loyal to our families. And the truth is, we're just being loyal to a damn story.
Right.
And what's sacred here is life. We are sacred. Our stories are not sacred.
Right.
But we've got it all turned around.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, recovery for me, and the journey in the Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag book is like, okay, when I started realizing this stuff, I realized that as a little kid, I really didn't believe what I was taught. But what do? You can't, you know, when you're 5 or 6 years old, you can't say, no, wait a minute, that's stupid. You know, so we take it on. We take it on, and we do the best we can with it. And we work
right.
with it, but we forget that we don't really believe it anyway. And then as adults, we have the power and the opportunity, as you said, to question it, to dismantle it, and to turn our attention around and start living from our inside out instead of from the outside in.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And, of course, the major religions, probably all religions, I would have to say, teach you that it's an outside-in process, that you need to go outside yourself to find the authority to, you know, relieve you of your sins and approve of you and this and that and the other thing. And so the inner journey doesn't really become a place of embarkation. It's more like, you know, the boat's ready, but you don't see it, and you don't realize that it has the possibility of going to some miraculous places. And so you're stuck on the broken down bus with other people, looking outside to priests and elders and the rest of it, who are basically there just to collect your money.
Well, you know, I think in some instances that's certainly true. In a lot of instances, I think we've all kind of fallen under the same spell. You know, a lot of people are sincerely doing their best, and they've given their faith to these stories in these ways, and they're living it to the best of their ability. You know, it doesn't mean it's any more true or correct. It just means that they're sincere in it. But then there's a whole other level that's just absolute insanity. You know, I mean, it's clear that you look at humanity today, watch the news, you know, the human reality is insane. It's out of control.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know? It's just off the hook.
Well, it looks, if you flip it, it looks a lot like any individual you might have met in a 12-step room somewhere who had to take their life all the way down and, as they say, hit bottom before they would be willing to question, why the hell am I doing what I'm doing? And we're not
absolutely.
There yet.
No, unfortunately, we're not.
Yeah, and, you know, that's scary, isn't it? It's like, you know, what's it going to take for the power structure of this world to wake up and realize that, you know what, destroying yourself over your need to be right is just a path to destruction. There's no happy ending in that story.
No, there isn't. So you traveled to Mexico and spent time at the various temples. What were some of the things that you discovered about yourself and about your spirit and how things really are in your trips to Mexico? You still have the capability of going there, right?
Oh, you bet. I'm going back on September 11th with a group of people. I have a home in Teotihuacan.
Which
is about an hour northeast of Mexico City. And we have a small boutique hotel there.
Oh, that's wonderful.
You ought to come with us.
Well, that's the day before my birthday, so maybe I will.
Well, there you go. All you got to do is say yes. It's easy. All of the information for my journeys is at spiritrecovery.com. and for a lot of what we do, as you said in the opening of the show, it's all at spiritrecovery.com. But Teotihuacan, to me, I signed up to go on a journey after I had read the Four Agreements, and there were some teachers that had worked with Miguel Ruiz that were leading journeys down there, and I just signed up, you know, didn't know anybody, didn't know anything about it. Got on a plane in Nashville, flew to Mexico City, and we all meet in the airport on these journeys. And I met this crew of people. There were about 20 people on that trip. And just from the get-go, when we got in a van and we all rode out to Teotihuacan, to where the pyramids are, and when I got out of the van in the parking lot of the little hotel there, I turned and looked down this long avenue that the Pyramid of the Sun and the Moon and the Temple of Quetzalcoatl and all the plazas. When I looked down through that whole vista, the whole place just flashed like it was 2,000 years before. Mm. And everything was painted and alive, and it was crazy. I've never had that experience before.
Wow.
It cracked my heart open. I felt this profound feeling of I had made my way home.
Mm.
Like I was home again. That was my introduction to that place, and it just got deeper and more expansive and sweeter through that whole journey. And of course, that my experience in that journey is written in the Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag book. You know, I guess I could say a couple of the most interesting things that happened on that journey is that I realized the presence of what I just call the spirit people, that they're so present there. There's just multiple dimensions of beings and just beings. I don't know what else you call them. That exists there, and they come to you. You know, they reveal themselves. I had experiences, and I continue to have experiences there that are so amazing and so expansive and so real. Real in a sense that, real on a much deeper sense even than this phone call. You know, this conversation. Mm. That it touches the truth of what we really are. And it allows us to experience what we really are in such a profound sense. And it's Teotihuacan, talking about legacies, Teotihuacan is a living legacy of healing and transformation for human beings for 5,000-6,000 years. There's thousands of years of the energy of humans waking up in that place.
Oh. That's a powerful medicine.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of fun, you know, and it tends to really magnify whatever you've got going on. So if you're carrying a lot of fear or a lot of heartbreak or a lot of suffering, you know, it's not all fun, but it magnifies it so that you can really realize what it is you're carrying around in you, and then working with the, you know, with the teachers or the shaman or the curanderas, you can find a way to move into that energy and then literally learn how to release it and let it go, so you're not living with it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Have you adopted some of the shamanic teachings as you've gone along about, you know, since the shamans walk between worlds and they are able to see those realms more clearly than we are, have you incorporated much of the shamanic teachings and soul retrieval and so on that they work with at the spirit level?
Yeah, you know, I have my relationship with it. I think what I've learned in living in relationship to all of that, and you know, once you develop a relationship with it, you live with it all the time. Is really how to share with people the power of their intent, their intention, and how to share with people the opportunity and the power that they hold to take their life back from all the ways that we give it away to the beliefs and the structures of the world. Because we literally give ourselves away to the world, and then we complain about the stuff that, you know, we complain about our condition or our situation, or we end up being miserable, and then we medicate, and then the medicating becomes addictions, and, you know, we inherit this trauma and this suffering from the legacy that we're born into. Well, the shamanic world offers a point of view that helps you sort yourself out from all that stuff. And you realize that, you know what, I'm not the suffering. I'm the one who's living the experience of the suffering. I'm not a cowboy, really. I'm the consciousness that's living this experience as a cowboy. Yeah, I had the talent and the abilities, you know, or I'm not a writer. Not really. I'm the one that's developed the ability to use that tool. So you learn how to sort yourself out from all of the roles and the identities that we've been taught in our cultures define us. And you basically can undefine yourself to a degree that, you know, I realize I'm not really sure what I am, but I really do enjoy being here these days.
Wonderful. Was there a particularly heightened or profound moment that you could say was a personal turning point for you in your journey?
There's been a bunch of them.
I'll pull one out of the bag, the medicine bag.
You go a few feet and you turn around again. Like I wrote about in the book, the first time I sat in the ceremony on the altar in front of the Pyramid of the Moon, it's a ceremony where we're all sitting together and we've made this walk, like a half-mile walk up the Avenue of the Dead, and as you make that walk, you're sending all the energy of your life into this etheric, energetic double that's walking beside you. Mm. You feed all that energy during this whole long walk, and once you get up on the altar, you bring all that energy with you, and you send that energy back into the light of the sun. So you're releasing all the attachments and all the stories and all the roles and all the legacy, everything you've inherited in the world, and you're letting it all go for real, just really letting it all go. And you use your imagination because our imagination is one of our greatest tools. Most of our life is literally just our imagining. And, you know, as I sat there in that first ceremony, it was, not only did the energy go, but my whole awareness went with it. And I just took off like I was flying through, you know, flying through the heavens, flying through these different frequency bands of light and feeling and awareness. And it just kept going until it was as though I just exploded. And all there was stillness and silence and light. And, you know, we don't use any medicine plants or anything. And that feeling, that sense and that feeling, you know, we probably sat there for 10 or 15 minutes, and I was just gone. I wasn't in my body. And when I came back into my body, looking through my eyes at the world, I could see what this world really is, what it's truly manifest from. It's actually this whole creation is a manifestation of light. And so it was like, oh my God, I could see what the world actually was for the first time. And I had the experience of what I really am, of what we really are. And we're so much more than what we've been taught to believe. they're just, it's amazing what we really are.
Can you, I know it's impossible to put into words the vastness of the being of a, you know, a person, of a human being, but could you shed a little bit of light on, you know, what you mean by that, you know, of who we really are, without, you know, limiting it? In other words, could you explain that a little more?
You know, I guess I'd have to relate it to experiences. Like, the first time you see your own baby, you know, when your first child is born and you hold that baby for the first time, you know, I say a lot of times that I thought I knew what love was until my first child was born and I held that little girl. And it changed the whole dimension of what I called love. It's that presence and that absolute unconditional connection and that awe and that sweetness, and it's just all in that one moment of experience. It's somewhat like that. You know, it's, gosh, you know, in a way it's almost like sex. It's almost like, it really is. It's almost like the feeling of an orgasm, but it's not physical. It's not a physical body. It's bigger than that. That would be several notches below.
Right, right.
The actual realization of realizing that you are light, and then having that sense, that feeling. You know, it's really hard to explain, and at the same time, it's so sweet and so simple and so. It's so humbling, because there's no ego in that place.
Uh-huh.
There's no personality in that place. There's just that everything is whole. There's no parts to you anymore. Everything is just whole, and there's no separation, and there's no fear, and there's no doubt, and there's no need. I don't know how you explain it. I could take you, though. You can come to Mexico with it.
Oh, okay. Well, that does seem to be, you know, an important part of the journey is to go to those places where that stimulate that part of us, you know, the higher self aspect or the spiritual aspect. And it is a process of unfolding, and, you know, I've been on different journeys, and they do take often some time to unravel, and then there's just a, you know, it's like a magical mystery tour, and you can't describe it. So, and the describing of it just seems to bring it down to a level that is really not what you're trying to describe. So, that might have been a tricky question to try to answer, but you did very well.
Well, you know, we have to have a reference point to share with people, and that's one of the challenging things. You can try and explain, if you've never been in the military, you can try and explain what it's like to be in a war zone, and if the person you're talking to doesn't have a reference point, there's no possible way for them to have a clue what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like, what we share as common reference points tends to, I think, it limits our ability to honestly communicate. But our mind is always wanting to talk about it.
Right.
The mind has this insatiable appetite to talk and judge and think and believe that it understands.
Right, right. So, in your journey today, you did a movie as well. How important was that in shaping your path? You were also in that movie as well, weren't you?
Yeah, we filmed a documentary of one of the journeys to Teotihuacan. So and literally the ceremony that I was just explaining to you is filmed in that documentary, and you see what I talked about, what I just explained to you. You see someone go completely there in the film.
Nice.
So it's called Dreaming Heaven. Yeah, it's called Dreaming Heaven, and it's available on Amazon. We had a distribution deal, and the publishing company went under, and then I got the rights back, and it's going to be re-released the end of September. But it is available on Amazon. And it's also available on Gaim TV. The documentary is on Gaim TV.
Wonderful.
But Dreaming Heaven is a documentary of 18 people on one of the five-day journeys through Teotihuacan. And it's real. There's nothing staged. There was no, you know, double takes. Everything you're witnessing actually happened. And there's a profound energy in that film, especially if you see it, on a big screen in a theater. People, audiences over the last couple of years since it's been out, people are really moved by the movie. And then the book is literally the journey through the plazas, through the temples. The book is a guide through the journey. So you can order the book, watch the film, and then you just follow the journey and follow the practices on the journey, and it really connects you to it.
That sounds marvelous. I'll have to check that one out for sure, because that's a wonderful way to be introduced and inspired and to actually feel those things without being there. And also get a preview of what, you know, you would go through if you do go down. Because it sounds like a wonderful trip to be on, especially with if you're going to be there in the house, the building that is described sounds just delightful, and the food and everything. I can imagine it's just a really rich, wonderful, enlivening, and awakening journey to go down there.
No, it really is. I love Mexico. I love the Mexican people.
Yeah, I do too.
I love the country.
Mexico
is like it's the heart of the mother.
Yeah, it's a wonderful place, and the people are wonderful.
Yeah, they really are. So maybe check out Dreaming Heaven. I tell you what, if you'll email the contact that you got in touch with me through, I will send you a copy of the book and the film.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you. I will do that after the show. I'll definitely do that. I love to see these things and continue to, expand my own journey, because I'm like you in that way. I'm endlessly curious about what's around the corner, and it always seems that, you know, it's never enough. The questions, maybe there are no real questions, but the experience of walking around the next bend and experiencing the next thing is always exciting, and, you know, expanding your awareness of what is. So, I would do that. That sounds wonderful.
No, that's our life. Life is...
You're right.
Gosh, life is such an amazing invitation to live. And yet it seems that so much of the time we spend not really living. You know, we get stuck in our head. We get stuck in our patterns. We get stuck in our stories, and we get frustrated, and we get tired, and it's all us doing it to us. That's the great thing about realizing the power that we have just through the nature of the choices that we make and what we choose to give our time and energy and attention to. It sounds very simple, and in fact, it is very simple. But reclaiming and recreating how we walk through the world and what we give our attention and energy to, and really becoming impeccable in that, is a great practice, and it takes time, and it's so worth it. That's the real recovery journey to me. That's what the experiences of being in a treatment center can lead to. That's what I've created over the years in these treatment programs, is really merging a conscious awareness and a reclaiming of authenticity and the power of our intention and our attention, and helping people realize that
you know, what we're suffering from is largely an inherited legacy. We didn't invent all this misery. It was here waiting for us, and it's not what we are. It's what we've been doing. And the opportunity to wake up and to recreate our life is the evolution of humanity. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal, you know, and it happens one person at a time, one day at a time, like the old cliche. That's how it rolls, you know, one man,
right.
One person at a time, one day at a time.
Well, you know, there's an awful lot of conditioning, too, that has been developed over. I mean, I was born in 1950, and so I have seen the beginning of the television set and watched the emergence of commercials and marketing and sales and the takeover of corporations, of other corporations. And it has been it's like watching a train wreck that's in progress, and you just wonder when it's going to finally hit the bottom of the canyon. So we are really programmed with from every angle and every direction. You know, if you're watching television, you know, buy this, do that. There's just hundreds of thousands of messages in a day's worth of programming. And it's no wonder that we're afraid to be ourselves and be authentic, because we're told that if you're authentic and different, you won't be accepted by other people because you've got to be like them and be popular. So there are a lot of bad messages going out in our society, and in a way, it seems like America is a country in denial. It's as if we're all alcoholics that are not in treatment.
Yeah, to a degree. Well, you know what? We may not be alcoholics, but we eat 80% of all the pharmaceutical drugs in the world.
Oh my gosh! Yes.
You know, I mean,
wow.
Yeah, and it, you know, I don't know. It is what it is. And,
right.
And what I've realized is all of that stuff, the only power it has is the power that we give it, you know, and that,
right.
Again, it
right.
keeps, for me, it keeps coming back to we as individuals hold the power.
Right.
You know, we keep
right.
pointing at our point of view is we're taught, well, you know, the man has all the power, or the corporations have all the power, or the government's got all the power. No, they don't. Not really. The power that they yield or wield is our power that we have given them by buying into that version of reality and by giving them our faith and giving them, you know, and living by fear. When we come back and bring our attention back to ourselves, and we bring our attention back to the simplest of our choices. I mean, the simplest choices, like what you're going to eat for breakfast in the morning and what you drink and you know, the transportation systems that we use. We keep feeding this system, and then we play like we're victims to the system.
Mm-hmm.
But we keep giving it our money. We give it our energy. We give it our time. You can still make a living. You can still go to work. You can still have a home and have a family. But you don't have to give that system your faith. You know, you start questioning things and living intentionally and with some awareness, and it changes the frequency of the whole deal. That's what I see, and that's what I've come to believe. It was the same thing for me in recovery. I could have easily have just gone with the official story of what a recovering person needs to do and how a recovering person should live and behave and what a recovering person should settle for.
Right.
I wasn't interested in settling again. You know, I wasn't interested in fitting into somebody else's system again. I was interested in the help, and I was grateful for it. You know, I was interested in the tools, and I was grateful for them. But I was not going to allow, I was not going to give my power to someone else's version of what I needed to do to be good enough again. I was going to own that for myself this time, and that's what my journey was.
Right.
You know, and isn't it the same thing? I mean, culturally, but it has to begin. You know, we're not going to recreate our culture and our world and the legacy of humanity. It has to be recreated from the bottom up. It will not be recreated from the top down, because the people up at the top of the pyramid have all the power, and you know, they have all of the, they got all the goodies up there. They don't have any motivation to want to change anything.
Right.
There's no reason for them to want to change.
Well, if anything, the motivation is to keep us in subservience, and if and keep us unaware and unconscious of, you know, of our power.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I think that's our choice. And
yeah, oh, I agree with you. Yeah,
we have to take
responsibility
for ourselves.
That's right. Well, you know, I hate to mention this, but we have gone through an hour already, and we've got just less than a minute to have you share, you know, your websites and what you're, you know, what you'll be up to soon, you know, your next trips and so on. So I just want to thank you for being on the show tonight and sharing your wisdom, strength, and hope. And if you would share the information on where people can find you and get your book and see, and the CD, the movie, and so on and so forth, that would be great.
Absolutely. You can find me at spiritrecovery.com. The Spirit Recovery Meditation Journal and the Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag book are both available on Amazon. They're available at your bookstore. And then the Journey to Mexico and the book Dreaming Heaven the film and Dreaming Heaven the book are available at Amazon. The film is available on Gaiam TV. And you can also find me, Lee McCormick, Lee Richard McCormick on Facebook. And Spirit Recovery is on Facebook.
Oh, good.
You know, that's kind of it.
All right. Well, Lee, thanks again for, you know, being on tonight and sharing your wisdom with us and your inspiration. And who knows, maybe I'll see you in Mexico.
Well,
thank you
awesome.
So much.
All you got to do is let me know, and I'll take care of you.
All right. Sounds good. All right.
Good night,
Lee.
Have a good evening.
You too.
Bye-bye.
And good night, everybody.